is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Well, hi, Susan.
I'm glad you're here today, because the biggest event of the week is the Story County Youth Fair at the fairgrounds in Nevada, July 20th to 24th. We have Eugenia Hartsook, Executive Director of Story County Extension, here to tell us about it, and I know you have a lifelong interest in the Story County Fair.
Well, our fair actually gets underway this Wednesday with judging of our static exhibits, and those are all of the non-livestock projects that our 4-H'ers have been working on. And then the official kickoff is on July 20th, and we will run through the 24th.
Full disclosure, I was a 4-H'er from age 8 until I graduated from high school. This would be late 50s to date me here. I raised beef cattle, both Angus and Hereford, and of course we fed the cow all year and trained it to lead behind the tractor and showed it at the fair. And then on Thursday, it was sold to be processed for the foods we love. And so every year we went through that process, and every year we went to the fair. So you're talking to somebody who's spent a lot of time on those fairgrounds. And I bet you do too, don't you, Eugene?
Excellent. I do. You know, 4-H provides a lifetime of learning for everybody that gets to be involved in whatever project you take, and the fair really provides a good opportunity for our youth to showcase all of those exhibits and project areas they've been working on all year long, like you said.
Well, you know, in the days when I was there at the fair, it was all livestock show. We had livestock, poultry, hogs, sheep, and now you should let us know about the tremendous variety of projects the kids have.
So much going on, and to offer folks, you really need to come out and see what there is exhibited. So in our Christie Hall building beside our extension office, folks can come in and see different projects that our youth have completed, ranging from visual arts. So we have one young man who actually made jewelry out of silverware with one of his projects, while another completed an oil painting of deer. We'll have our traditional baked goods, as well as in the community building, you'll see projects ranging from robotics to some very skilled photography exhibits. Our animals and livestock, of course, are still a main draw of folks to the fair, but we've really expanded. On Saturday, folks can come in the morning and watch rabbit hopping and guinea pig agility. Those little critters have been working on following a course where they hop and follow a track with precision, just like any other animal. These 4-H'ers have been working very hard with them. We'll also have beautiful floral displays being brought in on Saturday by our youth that have raised them. We have our Clover Kids, who are youth from kindergarten to third grade, which are a wonderful addition to our fair. They're able to participate in our small animal shows, so you see a variety of bottle animals, as well as exhibits that those youth have worked on during the year being exhibited at the fair. So lots of different opportunities, and it seems like every day there's a horse show that you can watch and be amazed by the skills that those 4-H'ers have in working with their animals.
It sounds exciting and so much a wider variety than the years when I was in 4-H, because as I said earlier, it was strictly large animals and well, I guess we had chickens too, but rabbits and some of these exotic animals were just not thought. We haven't thought of that yet, I guess. So you've got a lot more variety. And I think with the addition of other things that are not oriented toward farm animals, like photography, painting, and all kinds of graphic arts, that's really an addition to the fair since the days when I attended.
You know, we're very fortunate in Story County to live in such a diverse population, and we really see that in our youth exhibits. Robotics, you'll see a lot of very talented and intelligent youth bring exhibits that they've worked to build, whether it be a computer, whether they've programmed a program on the computer. We're going to have tractors that youth have rebuilt and put together. It's just, it's quite amazing what talents our youth have been able to build through their 4-H experience. And that's one thing I think that our clubs have really been able to further develop over the years, is to focus on what our youth's interests are and build those skills.
Well, you know, the fair begins, activities begin this coming weekend, the 13th, and then the fair itself begins on the 20th. Is that correct?
You are correct.
Actually, it seems to me as if you've got such a great variety, and also typical of a fair are queen candidates. Now, where do the queen candidates come from?
Well, this year we have 10 candidates, and these young women are from all over Story County, representing several different communities, and they will have been participating in different events that have actually already begun, and it will be announced on Saturday at 7 p.m. who the Story County Fair Queen will be for this year. So that's a very exciting time to come to the fair. Following that, some good entertainment will be Barnyard Relays, sponsored by our 4-H County Council. So that'll be a lot of fun, watching our youth compete against each other, doing some of our everyday farm tasks a little bit quicker, and hopefully creating some entertainment for folks to watch as the kids have a good time against each other.
So there's a lot of entertainment to be had, too, and fun activities. And I take it the Methodist Church stand is still there, the food stand, right?
It is. It's still there. It's a great place to get a piece of pie. That's always my favorite thing from their food stand. And right next door to them is the 4-H County Council Youth Food Stand as well. So get your meal from the 4-H youth, get your dessert from the Methodist, and everybody's happy that way.
Yeah, that building was there in the 50s. That's just basically unaltered. That's one of the few things on the fairground that has not been altered. A lot of the hog barns and other barns for livestock are pretty much the same, although they've been rebuilt with new shells, but their location is the same as the 50s. But the thing that looks the same as it did when I was young is that Methodist Church stand and the stand right by it. So there's plenty of good food to be had at the Story County Fair, like there was in that day.
There is good food, and of course, good people. You know, the county fair is an excellent time to go out and see people that maybe you don't get to see all year, and it's an excellent time to interact with youth in our county. All of our 4-H'ers are always happy to talk about their exhibits, whether it be their livestock, their large animals, their small animals, or the projects that they have in the community building or in Christie Hall. It's just a wonderful time to get out and meet people and learn about new things.
Now, the community building, that's the building that dates way back, right? The one that's up on the hill?
It is.
It's fantastic. It's built right after World War II, I believe. And it has these beautiful rafters and woodwork. And I know they spent a lot of money refurbishing that in recent years, didn't they?
They did. They did. It's been recently redone, and it is. It's an absolutely beautiful building. And the upper level, you'll find those 4-H exhibits that have been selected to go to the state fair, as well as our home improvement and our photography and natural and agricultural exhibits. And in the basement of that building on different days, you'll find different activities going on. During the weekend, there's traditionally been the Ames Woodworkers Club doing exhibits, and During the week, the 4-H County Council is hosting a bingo on Monday night for folks to come out and participate in. So there's always something fun going on there.
Well, you know, just going into that building, it's such a historic building, and it's been so beautifully restored that it's just interesting to walk in there. I did that last year, and I was so impressed with how it was done and how beautiful it is, and everyone is to be complimented for the great work they did to restore that building. 4-H clubs all over Story County have folks coming to the fair. Tell me what age groups are represented, from youngest to oldest.
All right. Well, our Clover Kids are our youngest group of 4-H'ers, and they represent kindergarten through third grade. And then our 4-H youth represent fourth grade through 12th grade youth. And you're right, we represent the all over Story County. Each community is represented by different 4-H clubs, as well as we have specialty clubs that are represented.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, when I was coming at 4-H, too, you know, you showed your cattle, and there was a variety of age group of kids showing the cattle. There could be 8-year-olds standing by a high school senior because the equivalency was the project and the breed of cow and all this sort of thing. So it's a great opportunity for younger kids to work directly with older teenagers in the same club and organization. And that is what 4-H was all about. I remember head, heart, hands, health, right?
You're correct.
The four clovers. Do you remember the 4-H motto, Eugenia?
Oh, of course. I'm a fourth generation 4-H'er. If I didn't remember, I'd be in trouble. But it's always to make the best better.
Why don't you remind everybody what that is? It's kind of a tearjerker for me.
It is to make the best better.
Yes. For my community, et cetera, in my heart. You know, I just think that 4-H is a fantastic youth organization, having been participants, and all my family were participants. And, you know, we sold those cows every Thursday at the sale. And that money accumulated to really impact my paying for college when I went to college. So all those steers gave their lives for a good cause. And I loved every one of them and fed them until it was time to present them at the fair. And I think is there still a livestock sale, too?
There is. On Wednesday evening, there is a ribbon auction where the youth participate in when they have a market animal. So it's a good learning experience for all involved, and following our county fair, then our youth participate in, of course, all of their record keeping to reflect on their year and their projects and all of the valuable learning that's occurred.
Well, there's all kinds of information out here in the media. And is there a website where people can go to find out about the events and when they occur?
Yeah, there's actually a few different places that folks can go. They can go to storycountyfair.com. And that is the Story County Fair website. They'll find all of the schedules and information on that website. They can also go to the Story County Extension website or find us on Facebook at Story County Extension.
Well, Eugenia Hartsook, Executive Director of the Extension Office over there in Nevada, about the Story County Fair coming up, and congratulations on all the preparation you've done, and now it bears fruit with the fair, always in July as it was in the 50s, it is now in the 21st century. Thank you, Eugenia.
Thank you. We hope to see everyone at the fair.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, and my co-host Paul Grierson has been talking with Eugenia Hartsook about the Story County Youth Fair taking place at the fairgrounds in Nevada this weekend, July 20th to 24th. The rest of the show will deal with other events taking place over the next week, including a preview of the Pantorium sessions taking place tonight, replacing the 7 p.m. rebroadcast of this morning's local talk. Right now, we have a different way of looking at the vote next Tuesday evening, July 23rd, when the Ames City Council will make the decision whether to go ahead with the building of the Ames Solar Farm. The city was trying to finance this by selling shares called solar packs to individual households or institutions, businesses, or churches. But the sale has been going slower than expected. The city has been delaying construction until the target of 80% of the financing has been covered by citizens pledging to purchase solar packs. The most recent announcement was that only 70% of the goal had been reached, but that was 5% more than the week before. Mary Rankin and Susan Guiazzo were on KHOI last Friday telling us about the efforts of the city, and we heard from some of the people marching in the 4th of July parade concerned with climate change. But to some people, the solar farm in Ames represents more than renewable energy for those who can afford it. It's a means to demonstrate climate justice. Our next guest is going to tell us about it. As many churches are trying to raise money for smart solar to offset their own electric costs, Collegiate United Methodist and Wesley Foundation has a unique program. I'm here with Chris Anderson, who's leading this program. Did you get the idea for this?
I'm glad to be here to talk about it a little bit today. I've been at Collegiate United Methodist Church and Wesley Foundation since about the late 90s. I've been a member there for most of the time that I've been there. I previously was in the area of climate research, climate change, climate science, and agricultural science. And one of the things that I've carried into my faith at Collegiate United Methodist Church is that it's not just about the numbers of how things are changing, but it's the impact it has on people. And over time, I began to realize that, well, not only can we detect changes in our rainfall in Iowa, for example, but we can also begin to see the changes in people's lives because of it. And it made me want to become more involved in helping the people who are most hurt by changes in climate. And so, for example, when SunSmart Ames became first advertised, what it said to me was we could have a mission project centered around it. It was timely in the sense that there were some tax credit changes that were likely to be implemented in 2018. And so some people were willing to make extra donations in 2017 to take advantage. And so all of that came together for me to be able to say, maybe we could take advantage of this SunSmart Ames and help not only ourselves, not only the environment, but also the people who have the least resource to be able to deal with changes, have the least resource to be able to pay their monthly bills. And so the way we work this is, as a mission project, we asked our members if they were interested in purchasing or pledging the solar shares and then donating them to what's called the Ames Ecumenical Housing. So the Ames Ecumenical Housing is for people who are on fixed incomes. And because of that, they're susceptible to changes in prices of electricity, prices of utilities in general. And because of that, they receive a lot of support so that they can keep those costs down at that site. And my thought was, as much of an economic justice project as a climate change project, then if we bought solar shares and donated them to the Ames Ecumenical Housing, over the long run, that could help stabilize their utility costs and allow more of the funding that goes to support the housing to actually support the housing and not the utilities. At the same time, of course, the solar energy is beneficial for the environment.
Where is Ames Ecumenical Housing?
Ames Ecumenical Housing has two apartment structures. There's one on Keystone Avenue up by the mall. And that's where I've met with their leadership to explain that we had interest in doing this donation, this targeted donation. And they have a number of units, and so it would require a very large donation to be able to cover all of the electricity use. But the intent of what we wanted to accomplish, marrying the economic justice as well as the climate justice into one mission project, was really the most important aspect and not the size of the donation.
How close are you to being able to cover the utilities for all of these units?
We're not very close at all, actually, because it's a very large entity. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know we did have enough to have about 15 power packs donated to them, pledged to be donated to them.
So are those counted in the 70% that was announced in the paper a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, that's correct. We did this in late 2017 when they first were asking for pledges, and we went through the whole process of submitting to the city how many pledges we received, and now they sit within the city's database as being pledged towards AIMS Economical Housing.
If the city votes no on July 23rd that they were not going ahead with this project, you won't give them the money that you've collected, but this basically would just kill the project, right?
So we're all in the same boat. If they don't move ahead, all of us personally have made pledges for my house. Personally, I've made pledges for our church and also for this particular mission project. And as far as I'm aware, if the solar farm doesn't go forward, then and it's abandoned, then those are just all, they don't exist, basically. We originally had spoken to the city council early on when there was discussion about whether the community should go forward with a community solar farm. There were some public hearings. And at one of the public hearings, I stood up and said that there was interest in being able to use a solar farm to be able to help the low-income people in our city. And that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to see it go forward.
How does this work? It's easy to understand buying a solar pack for your house. But if you live in an apartment or outside the city limits, you won't benefit from that. So why is it beneficial to buy into this project, for example? I guess anyone could buy into it. Is that right? Anyone could contribute?
And what I presented to the city council when they were trying to decide if they wanted to do a community solar farm was the potential for low-income people to have their utilities at a low cost and at a stable cost. And it's expected that utility prices are going to go up. For me as a member of my church and what I believe about humanity and Christianity, economic disparity is one of the main drivers of oppression, actually, in our society. And so the ability to lower your costs on utility enables you to have more income to do other things with it. And so for me, the SunSmart Solar was both an economic justice potential as well as a climate change potential. So the question is, how would you be able to enable people who wanted to, through a mission project, provide funding and help the low-income people have some of the utilities accounted for going forward? And the way it works is you have to work with an agency, a nonprofit, or an agency that's a missions-oriented agency who would be willing and able legally to accept a donation. And then that donation is assigned to an electric meter at one of the low-income housing locations that they own or that they manage. So in this particular case, with AIMS Economical Housing, our donation will be made to AIMS Economical Housing, and then the City of Ames and AIMS Economical Housing will decide which meter that donation gets assigned to, and then the benefit from the SunSmart Solar gets assigned to that meter.
So would this be ongoing? Say the solar farm is built, but not all the solar packs are sold yet. What's the potential for growth in this project?
Yeah, so the SunSmart solar packs currently aren't sold out, and whatever is left certainly would be able to be sold out through this mission project if people were interested at that level. They certainly have enough energy use in AIMS Economical Housing to be able to use many, many more solar packs than what we have collected so far and donated or pledged to donate to them. And so even as the solar farm expands, as the success of it spreads and more solar panels are wanted, you could still add into the mission project going forward. Again, they have two facilities, AIMS Economical Housing. One is both of them very large apartment facilities. So the electricity and utility footprint has a long ways to go to be covered by SunSmart Solar.
And if people would like to participate in this, how can they become involved if they're not members of the Collegiate United Methodist Church?
I think the best thing to do would be to email me. And my email address is CJ, the number 4, and the word miles. So think of it as airline miles. CJ4miles@gmail.com. And so if you email me directly, then I can make sure that we have the people in place who can accept any kind of assistance that you want or any type of participation you want to have in our mission project.
Well, do you have a Facebook page?
No, we haven't really advertised this outside of just in our church. We have what's called a cluster structure, and we have what was called a sending to serve cluster under which all of our special missions were housed. And so this was very much underneath that structure and something that we advertise internally and really did intend to advertise beyond the church walls. But there are other people who are interested from having conversations with people at other churches and even other people just in the community. And so the best contact at this moment is just directly to that Gmail account, cj4miles@gmail.com. And the best advertisement so far has just been word of mouth.
And I suppose if people can't remember that email, that they could call the Collegiate Methodist Church and they could help them with that?
Sure, I think that's appropriate.
Good luck on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Chris Anderson telling us about the Climate Justice Project at the Collegiate United Methodist Church, which hangs in the balance as the Ames City Council votes next Tuesday whether to go ahead with the proposed solar farm. But there is a lot of entertainment between now and then, including right here at the Pantorium. We're having back-to-back concerts here at the Pantorium tonight and tomorrow night. Pantorium sessions on Wednesday, July 17th, and Thursday, July 18th. Greta Anderson spoke with the artist playing tonight, Dan Tedesco. So let's listen in.
So, Dan Tedesco, we're excited to have you here at KHOI Studios on Wednesday to perform at our Pantorium sessions. I know you as a seasoned, established, I should say, Des Moines folk artist or roots folk. You know, you have a distinctive style and presentation. You have very interesting lyrics, and you're the real deal. I'm excited to have you.
I'm looking forward to coming. It was very nice of you to send the invitation for it.
So you have a new album out, and you're doing a tour to promote it. It's called American Darkness. And we're going to maybe listen to some songs from it. So would you say that this album is like a departure for you?
Yeah, I mean, I like to think every record I bring something fresh to the table or a new challenge in some form or another for myself. To explore and try to work with, but I do think it's definitely an extension of a narrative that's been sort of traced through my previous records, and I think it's a pretty relevant storyline to the things that have been going on culturally, politically, socially, in our world here in the U.S. over the last few years. Yeah, and musically, I think it is probably a refinement upon what I did with my previous release, which was a self-titled kind of experimental album of sorts that I made it at home and did it in a very sort of lo-fi setting. And I got real interested in working with drum loops and sort of this electronic element pushed up against just a vocal and an acoustic recorded in a very lo-fi setting. So you have this very raw sort of sound being juxtaposed up against a real clean electronic element. And that was done in a very sort of dramatic fashion, whereas this album takes that idea and sort of, like I said a minute ago, sort of almost refines it and polishes it in a certain way because it was done in a studio, so the fidelity is a whole different deal. But we did some things where we tracked live drums but made them or built them into like a drum loop where you would just have a drummer record four bars of a groove, and then once you had that really tight and locked in, we just extrapolate that out over the length of the song and just keep that as sort of this machine-like element. There's not really a human piece to it, and that plays up against the music and the performance that I've delivered on top of it. So in that sense, it was sort of a furthering of that concept and just further exploration of, I guess, tension between the two things, more of an organic performance again, sort of this mechanical, non-organic element.
That's interesting. So will you bring those drum loops technology to performance on Wednesday? So when I've seen you perform, one of the really interesting things about you is that you do provide your own percussion, but it's usually through some kind of movement of your body. You're like a Joe Price in that way that you're always dancing around with your feet to make some percussion sounds.
Yeah, no, in the live setting, I've yet to really get into bringing along any sort of like drum machines or drum loops to add that. I definitely did think about that actually pretty seriously when I put that previous album out, which has been a few years, but I've yet to actually do it. So the live show does not have that element. It's still basically me playing, and the percussion I provide is this thing through a stomp box
that
I have somebody build for me that I use with my foot. Yep.
Yeah, I love that part of your performance, actually.
Yeah, it's something kind of different. It's a lot of fun to use it. When I first got that, it was sort of like anything when you get a new toy or new instrument. You want to use it all the time. You kind of have to use it all the time to figure out where it belongs. But once I got it dialed in, I was good to go with it. And now I've learned where it really belongs and where it becomes gratuitous. So.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I'm interested in the themes of the songs that you described. I mean, the reflection on today's culture, which really has taken, such a drastic turn, surprising many of us, and certainly a lot of our listeners. Is there a song that we can play now to introduce, the way that you deal with this new political culture?
The second track on the record is sort of like an unofficial single of sorts. It's called Backstage.
Okay.
And that track, a lot of people, when they just hear it kind of on the initial listening, the initial layer that you kind of take away from it, it just comes across as sort of a story about the life of a musician, and it's kind of the backstage, quote unquote, of the industry.
Uh-huh.
But when I put it on this record, the incident that happens, and this is what goes on when you make an album, you put songs together, and all of a sudden there's these other pieces that come into play, or other perspectives when it's listened to against the other tracks on the record. This song Backstage almost can be taken as like an allegory of sorts to look at what's been going on here in the U.S. for the last handful of years, and it's from a social standpoint. It's one of those things when you listen to it in the scope of the overall record, you can start to see these other pieces of the story and some other metaphors start to reveal themselves that might not necessarily register with someone if they were just listening to it as a sole track by itself.
Okay.
So.
Well, we're going to take a listen and see if we can pick up on any of that.
Feedback's howling through the arena. The promoter's trying to dodge a subpoena. Beer in the tub. Some kind of sour stink hanging above. Slipping the curtain, leaving the stage. Like animals returning to the cage. Reaching for her hand. Draws the line. It's just for the money. You ain't no friend of mine. Makeup's fading, promises breaking, witnesses claim hearts shaking.
First of all, I have to say I really like what you're talking about with the drum loop and that tension between the voice, which is dealing with darkness, and then, in the background you have that sort of supporting drum sound, but then it can also lend itself also to the sense of a kind of emptiness because it is so precise.
Sure.
What kind of inspiration do you have to write songs like this?
Well, I think about the best way to try to explain something like that. I mean, I'm definitely a pretty acute observer.
That's what I really picked up on, you know, all these details that come to you almost as if, you know, you're just a screen portraying what's going on around you.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite songwriters are the type that write almost from, like, the perspective of, like, a screenplay as opposed to, like, really explaining something or being very blatant or straightforward. I like the idea of using details to sort of create the overall landscape and set of characters for people to then put themselves into the place of the narrator. I think that when you show it to people like that as opposed to tell it, it gives someone the opportunity to really get inside of it themselves and look around, you know, with their own thoughts and feelings as opposed to me just beating them over the head with what it is that I think. There's not really any reason for me to do that. Like, I don't get a lot of satisfaction out of just telling people what it is that I think. I'd rather show something the way that maybe I see it and then offer the opportunity and the chance if somebody is interested and willing to do it to actually get into that place and look around for themselves, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That really lends itself to a good listening session. And I want to reiterate that Dan Tedesco, who I'm speaking with, a Des Moines folk artist, is going to be coming to KHOI Studios on Wednesday this evening at 7 o'clock, and we'll be presenting a whole series of songs from his new CD, American Darkness. And one of the great things that we love, that we offer musicians when they come to our station, is that our audience is very respectful. We're not drinking beer at the same time we're listening to you. We're not talking to our friends at the same time we're listening to you. We are just listening to you, partly because if we were talking to each other, it would be going out over the air, because it goes out over the air live at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, but it does. It's a very respectful, very receptive audience that, you know, we're going to really appreciate some of the subtleties of your songwriting and performance that might not happen if you were just playing in, you know, the pub across the street, which has its own advantages.
Sure. I definitely look forward to those kinds of environments performing. So.
And it sounds like your music in particular is going to shine in that circumstance, because you have a lot to say and you have a lot to cause us to reflect upon. So.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a lot of, or at least I like to think that there's a fair amount of nuance and subtlety that really adds up to a lot if you have the patience to take it in. So when it's an audience that's really listening, it can be a pretty powerful thing, both for myself and also for the people in the room.
Nice. I hope that happens. We're trying to get the word out. And once again, we are so pleased to be able to present you here at KHOI. And why don't you select the song that we go out with?
Why don't you do the title track, American Darkness?
American Darkness. Very good. Thank you so much, Dan Tedesco. We look forward to your performance tonight, Wednesday night.
Times and good people in their hearts, but I can't promise that you will always be safe. I can't promise you won't be subjected to hate. I can only hope you don't mix with heartless. Don't get lost in the American darkness. Gunfire in the wee hours at a nightclub. Boy,
heart gets divided and a new commotion starts. I can hear the distant banging of the gavels. I can hear the cry to protect us from ourselves.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and Greta Anderson just brought us a preview of tonight's Pantorium session, broadcast live from 7 to 8 p.m. instead of the 7 rebroadcast of local talk. So tune in to hear more or stop by the Pantorium for a live concert. Tomorrow night, same place, same time, we present Vinyl Vagabonds, Central Iowa's favorite R&B funk soul roots band, with new or newly covered hits from the 1970s radio. You'll dig their infectious grooves and expert musicianship. We're going to close out the show with local Ames artist Cameron Gray presenting an unusual art experience titled Immersion on Saturday, July 20th from 12 to 7 p.m. at the Des Moines Social Club, 900 Mulberry Street, Des Moines. Last summer, Cameron was a guest on KHOI, interviewed by our KHOI intern, Saquon Gatlin. Those of you who may remember it know that his art is provocative. I was more interested in learning how Cameron developed as an artist with a mission to bring whites in central Iowa into the black experience and to give blacks the opportunity to share the beauty of their community with whites. Here's a little of what he told me.
I wanted to make sure it was as authentic of an event that I remember as a child as possible.
Okay, well, maybe the place to begin is with just a little about you. Where were you a child, and what was authentic when you were a child?
So I was born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama, but I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, and my parents are both from predominantly black neighborhoods, and so they made sure that as kids that we were able to not only maneuver through the neighborhood that we were from, but then also, you know, have experiences with growing up, you know, downtown where they lived too as well. And so, like, hanging out with a bunch of black kids as well. So I felt very blessed about that relationship because now I'm able to go both ways and to understand both experiences. I feel very blessed to have that type of childhood. And so when I talk about the authenticity, I'm talking about within those particular neighborhoods, any given Saturday or Sunday or whatever day somebody's cooking, it could be a situation of where you get there at noon and you just smell barbecue going, and you run into my grandma's house and be like, hey, you know, they're cooking down a couple streets, you know, a couple blocks down the street, go and get you some food or something, or bring me some back. Yeah, so it could be that whole experience of a gathering, if you will, of just people of the community and the neighborhood that would just get together and just, you know, socialize. Like, you'll get there at noon and then people are still playing outside until about, I would say, 11, 12 at night, of where they're just playing cards or talking crazy to each other. And it's something that was really, I was really fond of as a child. You get to meet different kids from the neighborhoods, and a lot of those kids that I still know to today. So it's nice. I feel very blessed to have that relationship as a kid, and I thank my parents for instilling that within me and my brother, despite not growing up in the same place as they did. Sometimes it would be the whole street. Like, it would just become this big, big thing. And that's the reason why, like, within my event, I include a bouncy house, because I remember, like, Auntie Janice would always rent out a bouncy house for the kids to play in. They would start grilling or something to that degree. So you would get kids in from like the projects that were like right next to my grandmother's house to come over and they would come play with us. And so like you're getting a gamut of just children from every single walk of life. And so like, again, that was one thing that I loved about being there was like the community and that feeling of community was just so powerful to me and impacted me truly. And like, that's the thing I want to bring to in Des Moines is like having that same power of community and feeling that when people come to the event. So that's what we're hoping to have.
Well, in Birmingham, I presume most of the people in this community were African American, right?
Correct.
But in Des Moines, I guess you're hoping to have it be mixed.
Exactly.
Of course, you're doing this as an art exhibition, and you are an artist, and I think
for sure.
Maybe we ought to talk a little about that, because what you're talking about sounds more like a happening than like an art exhibition.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, like within art, you can meld between a lot of different mediums. And so it is an art exhibition of wealth. Like it's a new body of work that I'm willing to present to the world. But then it's also I want it to be a community engagement thing, because I feel like it's important for, again, talking about the black kids that don't get the opportunity to see fine art within their communities because of their parents working all the time or because of different avenues. They don't get brought down to the Des Moines Art Center often. And so I like the aspect of being able to show those kids about like, okay, so yes, I'm doing these art things and I'm doing these drawings, I'm doing these photos and stuff. There's more things that art can provide for the community. Like you can have a community event too as well as an artist and still be an artist. And that's the one thing I loved about raising money the way I do is like that aspect of showing the community need as well. They're helping me do this thing. It's not just me out of pocket everywhere. They're helping me provide the money so I can actually provide it for the community. So it shows that the community really wants to see this thing take place, and they're actually really investing into it. And that's the beautiful thing that I love about it, is that aspect of kids being able to see that, of like, I would have never thought this was even possible with art, but look, he did it, and so maybe if I want to do it, you know, I could do it too as well.
Well, how did you become interested in art?
For me, it was just I used to doodle, like as most kids do. It's just like you choose a character out of a book or, you know, television, and you try to draw it, and then like you know, oh, that doesn't look right, so you just keep going back into it and until you get it perfectly. And then like even as I continued to grow up, I would always doodle. Like it would be cars or like Dragon Ball Z characters, and then like I saw Toy Story, the movie Toy Story. So I saw that movie and it blew me away. Like it blew me away. I was like, okay, this is the thing I want to do. I want to be able to draw something and then put it on screen, and then for kids to see it and like be blown away by the way the things look at that particular time. Cause like no movies were done like that at that particular time when they released Toy Story. And so after that, I was like, okay, I'm going to go. That's what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to go to SCAD or I'm going to – oh, Savannah College of Art and Design. But SCAD was really expensive, and I didn't get really many scholarships to go to school. And so Auburn University in Alabama was the next option for me. It was a local school, a lot cheaper than SCAD was, and they offered graphic design there. So I figured, okay, I didn't know what graphic design was, but I believed that that was the closest thing I was going to get to doing like computer animation. And I figured I can go to grad school and figure out the rest. And so I went to Auburn, went through the first year of their introductory, like the arts graphic design degree, and it was very cookie cutter and I didn't like that. And so then I was like, I'll just do art instead, because it allows me to do whatever I wanted to do rather than be like, okay, click here, click there, click there. Depending on how well you click there, then that's your grade. Like I wanted somewhere that I can roam and free and be free in the things I was creating. And so really after that, it was pretty much golden. Like I was stuck. Like I saw the impact that the art I was creating and Auburn was making. And so I was like, okay, this is going to make a bigger impact, or can make a bigger impact than I was doing than me creating my own film.
Well, what kind of impact did it make?
I mean, it was just the reception I was getting from a lot of the students, but then also my faculty and the other black students that were around in Auburn to see that, seeing that impact made on them was crazy. There's not many black artists at Auburn University, so to see themselves reflected within the work, it was pretty amazing to them.
But now you are a printmaker.
Correct, yeah. When I was at Auburn and like got my degree and everything, I was like, oh, I know this easy. And then I went to work in St. Louis with internationally known printmaker Tom Huck. And it was basically like learning everything all over again. But it was the most amazing thing that I've ever done in my life. Like, it was just one of those so impactful moments in my life. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about the medium. I learned a lot about the business, too, as well, of like, how do you manage print projects? How do those things work? How do you get your stuff published? Who do you need to talk to? Like, where do you go to get exhibitions? How do you do the business side of art? Because, like, that's something that they never teach you in undergrad, and that's, I always find that really unfortunate, because I wish I would have known some of the things that I had to learn in St. Louis earlier, because it would have set me off on a better path.
In reading your vita, I see that you had at least one exhibition in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get connected to that?
My last year in college, I was fortunate enough to go on University of Georgia has a phenomenal study abroad program. And so basically what it was like a two-month excursion throughout all of Italy. And it was all based in Cortona. And so during that particular time, we had a show there of like all the work that we had created during that particular time. And so it was really beautiful to be a part of that exhibition, to see what all the work that I did had been cultivated into by the end of it. And so it was cool to be reflective of that and to see all of that work of not only mine, but the other students that were on that trip with me, work being displayed. So That was kind of how that kind of took place.
To get back to the event this July 20th, you have some new work that you're getting ready for that. Would you like to talk about that at all?
Yeah, of course. The current exhibition that I'm showing right now is called Immersion. And basically what it represents is my immersion into my own blackness in a sense of and understanding the beauty of blackness within not only talking about our skin tone, but then like the way that we move, the way our hair looks, the way everything about blackness that exudes power, but then also beauty as well. Because I feel like within our community, we've always been told to hate ourselves in a sense of like when you look at leading ladies and stuff to that degree within television and screen, it's always a fair-skinned woman. Yes, she might be black, but it's not still the blackness that I know. Because we come in all different shapes, colors, tones, and all that kind of stuff. And so within my own work that I'm doing now, I've been finding that within other aspects of Ames, as in looking in nature and finding blackness within nature, of showing that we've always been here, we've always existed. It's just who's going to bring light onto these things. And so within the exhibition, you'll see a lot of things about the black body being contorted or being a part of the landscape, if you will, or this metaphorical landscape, but then also seeing the actual landscape being depicted as well, of showing black items that exist within the zeitgeist of nature, whether it be black wood or a mound that, because of the way I shot it, looks like a mountain, if you will, a black mountain.
Well, I know that music is going to be part of your immersion experience,
for
right?
Sure. Yeah, we're going to have a live DJ.
I asked you to recommend a piece of music to end your interview, and by coincidence, the issues are very similar to our Pantorium session, American Darkness. Your piece is Gil Scott-Heron, Home is Where the Hatred Is. And we'll play as much of it as we can before the end of the hour.
A junkie walking through the twilight, I'm on my way home.
her, never went home again.
You've been listening to KHOI Community Radio, where Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Eugenia Hartsook, Chris Anderson, Greta Anderson, Dan Tedesco, and Cameron Gray.
You can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will find also information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Susan Franzen. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was from Tom Tedesco's new CD, American Darkness, and a selection from Gil Scott-Heron, Home is Where the Hatred Is.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or you can contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know. So contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow Donate button on our website.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.